I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Clergy Penitent Privilege. It's a fancy name for the simple rule that what you say to your priest, rabbi, or reverend in private is off limits to the courts. Based in Roman Catholic tradition, the confidentiality of confession was abolished in English common law during the Protestant Reformation, but regained its legal footing in America in 1812. The case involved a Catholic man who confessed to his priest he'd stolen property. The aggrieved party later subpoenaed the priest, demanding that he reveal details of the crime, but the priest refused. The courts backed him, and clergy penitent privilege has been enjoyed by all faiths and protected by U.S. courts ever since. Now, fast forward to the 21st century. In Massachusetts and other parts of the country, stories of child sexual abuse by priests and others have legislatures reviewing the protections afforded to clergy-congregant relationships and removing the veil of confidentiality. Connection listeners, should members of the clergy be required to report what their congregants tell them, even in the confidence of confession? Or should the secrecy of this relationship be protected as an expression of religious freedom? We invite you to join our conversation. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio today by Father Edward Vasek. He is a priest and professor of moral theology at Weston Jesuit School of Theology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We also have with us Paul Rothstein. He teaches evidence law at Georgetown Law School. He's in a studio in Washington, D.C. And on the line, Massachusetts State Senator Cheryl Jakes. She's a sponsor of legislation that would require priests to report information regarding sexual abuse, but it would exempt information that is revealed in the confessional. So, Senator Jakes, let me start with you. Explain how the legislation would change existing law.
Sure. We have in Massachusetts a law, it's called the Mandatory Reporting Law, and it requires a whole list of professions, doctors, social workers, teachers. They are mandated by statute under pain of criminal penalty to report any signs of child abuse that come to their attention. What we have done is file legislation that would add clergy to the list of mandatory reporters, with a very, very narrow exemption for that one-on-one direct spiritual counseling, a.k.a. confession in Catholic faith, but called other things in other faiths.
So that exemption, does that mean if I'm walking out of the church, I take my minister by the elbow and say, I did this horrible thing in privacy, that falls under your clergy penitent exemption?
You have to look at all the circumstances. It can be, you know, there has to be the expectation of privacy. If I said that in an area to a rabbi or a priest and there were others in the room, clearly a third party could have heard it. In fact, all of the headline cases in Massachusetts involving clergy abuse of children, not one of them came to light because of a confessional situation. They were, you know, letters from parishioners. They were civil suits filed or criminal investigations begun. So we really do think that that is a very, very small fraction of how these problems would come to light. What's far more common is that a priest is aware of it, he sees it, or he's told it, or he's approached by a parent and says nothing. Under this law, he would now have to be forthcoming to the authorities, give full details of what he knows, the name of the child, you know, why he believes there may have been abuse, so that an investigation could move forward.
Senator Jakes, I have with me a list of states that have passed similar legislation. In some cases, those states have not provided an exemption for the confidence that is exchanged in the confessional. Why did you decide to create that exemption?
I actually can't take credit for that. The author of the bill was Senator Jim Jajuga, who left the Senate to become Secretary of Public Safety. This bill was filed a number of years ago, and it has come to the surface of the pile of many bills filed in the last few months because of the headlines of clergy abuse.
Okay, but you could have changed it. You chose to keep it. Tell me
why.
Well,
I will tell you, I don't think that there are 200 legislators. I don't think the appetite was there, nor would we have been able to get a bill through that completely abolished the concept of the confessional. I mean, that is, you know, really a whole nother discussion in terms of, are we ready to do away with that sacred one-on-one privilege that we have recognized for a long time, like attorney-client privilege, like other privileges. And frankly, talking to my colleagues, I don't think we would have been able to get this bill through had we done away with the confessional concept.
Senator Jakes, thanks for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Massachusetts State Senator Cheryl Jakes. Father Ed Vasek's with me in the studio. Tell me what the church's opinion is of this type of legislation.
The church is strongly supportive of, I think, the same sort of thing that Senator Jakes is trying to get through. In other words, there is clear need for disclosure in many of these cases, and as she has pointed out, all of the cases of which child abuse, they weren't matters of confession, but rather they were matters that were learned outside.
But we don't know that, really. I mean, we don't know what happened in the confessional booth.
Exactly. You're quite right. And there it's a matter of distinguishing between certain kinds of revelations, certain kinds of confidences in certain circumstances that are highly privileged, and lots of other kinds of conversations that are not quite so privileged and others that are not privileged at all. So the confessional is one where the Catholic Church and many other religious groups have insisted or tried to hold this as a sacred area off limits from the sort of investigative powers of the state. And so I think the Catholic Church would strongly support this particular kind of legislation.
Now, you're a priest. You take confession. You also go to confession. Mm-hmm. If I were to come to you and say, I've got something that I need to talk to you about, under this legislation, would you say, well, Dick, let's go into the confessional? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's sort of using that as a cone of silence under the circumstances.
Generally speaking, no priest would do that. In other words, generally speaking, we'd go into a parlor, a room where you and I would talk, and there we would have the kind of trust that we would give to one another that's ordinarily part of any counseling situation. And ordinarily speaking, whatever goes on in that conversation would also be privileged, but not quite so strongly privileged.
So you'd feel obliged to say, if I'm sitting in the parlor, you realize what you tell me here may not fall under the confidentiality that we've come to know in this church.
I would do that if it weren't obvious to the person. So in other words, the confessional is known by all Catholics to be off limits to any kind of disclosure. All other conversations are also matters of trust, also matters of pastoral work, and therefore most people come expecting confidentiality, and it's much like when one goes to one's psychotherapist or whatever, you talk about whatever you want in the hopes that so being disclosive, you can discover all that you need to discover and get all the help that you need to get. So ordinarily speaking, if somebody comes in and says in a confidential way, I'm having trouble with my husband, or I'm having trouble with my wife, or my kids are drug users or whatever, typically the priest would not say, oh, well, I've got to go tell somebody about that, but rather say, well, let's see how we can get some help here.
Paul Rothstein, tell me if the states where this particular piece of privilege is not protected, whether or not there's a significant change there?
Well, in most of the states, they require that have legislation like this to require disclosure of child sexual abuse. They do not make an exception, at least not a specific exception, for the confessional. Just to say a word from the secular side about the benefits that society gets from keeping the confessional and other counseling sessions with rabbis or ministers or priests, benefits that society gets from keeping that sacrosanct. In that case that you mentioned in New York, which was the first significant case of the 20th century in which priest-penitent privilege was kept confidential, the priest advised the person to give back the property that he confessed that he had stolen, and that property was given back. So my point here is that if you keep it confidential, then people are encouraged to come to their priest, and then the priest tells them what is the right thing to do, may counsel them not to commit any future crimes. People try hard to obey their priests. It provides a certain amount of mental health for society because people might be agonizing over various things. It's a little bit like a psychiatrist. So it can prevent crime. It can soothe people, provide mental health for society, in addition to protecting their privacy and their religious freedom.
When you look at this legislation from the secular point of view, do you see it as something that would require a priest to pick up the phone in the church and say, someone has just come in and told me this? Or do you look at it more in terms of giving the right of the state to then subpoena a priest later on and say, you're going to have to come clean on this.
Well, those are separate issues, and the priests that I know tell me that whatever the law provided, that they would not breach the sanctity of the confessional no matter what the law provided.
I mean, even if the law said, you have to tell us, the priest would say, no, sorry, we'd sooner go to jail.
That's correct. Now, most of these cases in Massachusetts don't involve disclosures in the confessional. They involve priest-to-priest disclosures that were not necessarily in a spiritual counseling session, so they would not be covered by this privilege at all anyway. The lifting of the veil of secrecy to disclose and prevent serious crime is something that's taking place in all the confidential relationships under the law in society. Just a couple of weeks ago, the American Bar Association voted to change their code of ethics so that a lawyer is permitted to reveal potential grave bodily injury or death that the client may have confessed that the client is going to do in a lawyer-client counseling session. The same is true in doctor-patient, psychiatrist-patient. In a recent Supreme Court case, Jaffe versus Redmond, they said the psychiatrist-patient privilege may well have an exception to prevent physical harm.
Let me ask Father Vasikin, if you feel in that we're talking about something that is in any way different from lawyer-client, teacher-student, doctor-patient, whether or not when we're talking about a person's relationship with his spiritual leader, there is something different there.
I think there, at least from my viewpoint, something's very strongly different. And the difference starts with this. We understand that the most important relationship a person can have is their relationship with God, and the one relationship that they absolutely must get right is the relationship with God. As a consequence, we try and create a form. It's called the Sacrament of Reconciliation, Penance, Sacrament of Confession, however one wants to describe it, in which a person can come and try and become right with God. And so because of the paramount importance of that particular relationship, it's different than simply helping a person get right with themselves or right with society.
You know that some Protestant church leaders have said that this law doesn't go far enough, that in fact the seal of confession needs to be broken so the field is leveled and there is not that privilege.
And I hear that and I recognize that, and I think most Catholics would simply do as Mr. Rosslyn has said. Most priests would just simply go to jail. As a matter of fact, at that particular point, just in terms of legal matters, the priest would be caught between two separate laws. One would be the law of the state, but the law of the church says that if a priest reveals what goes on in confession, he's automatically excommunicated. So he no longer can function as a priest the moment he does that. So in that kind of serious breach, the priest would lose his own right to be, to function further.
So even outside the confidentiality of the confessional, if I said I need to tell you something and it has to be in private and you said I'll listen to it and then somebody said you're going to have to say what Gordon told you, would you say, sorry, you put me in jail first?
No, that would be outside of the confessional, that would be a different matter. And that's why it's terribly difficult for a priest, because you have different fora. Unlike, for example, a psychiatrist or a doctor, you have different fora. You have the confessional, you have the cocktail party conversation, you
counseling
have
sessions.
Counseling sessions,
yeah.
Etc.
All right, Connection listeners, we're talking about legislation that would change the relationship that people have with their priest, with their minister, with their rabbi. We're interested in your thoughts. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio.
From Bob.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name is Dick Gordon. We're talking about laws that have been passed in some states. One is pending in the state of Massachusetts, but it is a change that is happening across the country where legislators are choosing to make a shift in the confidentiality that exists between clergy and congregants. My guest in studio, Father Ed Vasik. He's a professor at Weston Jesuit School of Theology, and joining me from a studio in Washington, D.C., Paul Rothstein. He's a professor of law at Georgetown University. When we talk about the confidentiality of the confessional, Father Vasek, you write in one of your papers that there are dangers in that as well, that there are dangers of the abuse of power and status, that there are dangers of the avoidance of responsibility, where I come in and say I did this awful thing and I walk out saying I'm done with that. And you know that as people listen to our conversation and watch the change in legislation, they are also aware of what's going on in the headlines. Father Gagin is back in court in Massachusetts. There are as many as 80 priests whose record has been called into question by the Archdiocese. And whether or not, in fact, what's happening in the news isn't in almost a wholesale, driving what's happening in the changes of the confession, and whether or not it'll be difficult to protect this confidentiality.
I think it might be. Surely there's a great move to try and override this, and it's been going on in many override any area of protection of privilege when it comes to the confessional, but in all other areas. And there's famous cases in which somebody came to a counselor and said, "This is the famous Tarasov case. Look, I'm anxious. I want to kill my person who has just jilted me, but she's out of the country. And would you help me get over my anxiety till she comes back so that I could kill her?" And the person there was required by the professional life that he led to try and remedy that, to warn the person. Now, in the same sort of way, there's Catholic priest mindset starts with the high privilege of confessional, and then probably goes on and extends it probably unnecessarily strongly into other areas. You get, as a priest, all sorts of confidences. Somebody says, "Oh, we're having a baby," and that is that a confidence or is that a not confidence? Can you spread that or can you not spread that? Somebody says, "I had an abortion." That's a different kind of a confidence, and the priest has to make judgments at all times: is what's the context, what's being revealed, is this good or is this bad, and how much does this person would this person mind if I reveal it? What the expectation in the confessional is quite different. If a person comes to cardinal law and says, "Look, I've done the following sorts of things," that's not a confessional sort of a matter. That's a matter between a priest and a priest, or a matter between a boss and his subordinate. If you want,
what if someone were to say to a Catholic priest in confession that that they had done this awful thing, and then within the church, does that confidentiality exist with the channels that go up? If you as priest then go to the bishop and say, "Someone told me this," and the bishop goes to the cardinal and says, do the penitents have the assurance that that happens or that that doesn't happen?
Almost always it doesn't happen. If it does happen, it happens only with the permission of the penitent itself. You might say, "I don't really know what to do with this particular case. With your permission, I'll go and ask about it." But if you do that, usually there would be no names mentioned, and the details would be removed from the particular case. And furthermore, anybody, actually, in the Catholic mindset, anybody who hears a confession or hears the material of a confession is equally bound. So that if a person were sitting outside of the confessional and a lay person and overhears things in the Catholic mindset, that person also, not just the priest, is also bound. Now, that's not being covered by the legislation, I presume, but at least in the Catholic mindset, that particular conversation is bound by all who hear it and not just the priest, although obviously the priest is the person who ordinarily is the only one who will hear it.
Professor Rothstein, how does all this square with the First Amendment, which says explicitly that lawmakers can make no law respecting or prohibiting the free exercise, the establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof?
Well, you're darned if you do and darned if you don't under the Constitution. If you say that priest-penitent communications are privileged, but there are other non-religious situations where there is not a privilege, then you might be favoring religion. The law might be favoring religion, which is a no-no under the Constitution. On the other hand, if you say the confidence of the confessional shall be breached, then you're interfering with a very important sacrament of the church, and it's the state interfering with religion. The way I come out after examining these things is that probably it would be determined that there is not a constitutional problem either way you go, but people are very sensitive about this, and that's why they're sensitive about making changes in the area. Although, as I said, in all privileged relationships, confidential relationships under the law. There's a growing impatience with allowing people to hide behind privilege and enable themselves to commit serious and gross crimes and harms.
Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Eric calling us from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Eric.
Hello. Thank you. Interesting topic. As a quick disclaimer, I am a Christian, a servant of Christ, though I'm not a Catholic. I have some tremendous problems with Catholic theology and doctrine and so on. But having said that, I want to, at the moment, stand on the side of the confidentiality of the priest and the one who's doing the confession. Unless there is, in this case, I think we should focus upon the child who's been molested. And if they're going to lift this type of requirement on the Catholic Church, then let's be consistent across the board when it comes to lawyer-client privilege, as well as the teacher and student, as well as spouse and husband. If we're talking about a child, let's be consistent across the board on this thing. Don't just pick on this convenient whipping boy such as the Catholic Church because of the anti-religious sentiments of some people, and this is just their prime opportunity to...
My understanding, Eric, is that in cases where this law is being passed, it is not, in any case, just the clergy that are being marked, but it is teachers and doctors and social workers and psychiatrists and other professionals who come into contact with children. And the question is, should we include the clergy or not? In some states, the clergy are included. In some states, they're not.
Well, then, therefore, if they are including the spouse, the husband, the teacher, student, lawyer, client, and all of that, then I would say this is great. I'm all for it in this case. Go ahead and lift this type of ridiculous rule on the Catholic Church. It's not an issue of church and state here. We're talking about life and death, which is above church and state.
And in your case, Eric, you're talking specifically about the abuse of children. You're not talking about someone who's stolen something.
Precisely.
Let me ask Paul Rothstein, though, on the spousal responsibility here, because that's different, is it not, from the list of professionals that I went through?
The spousal privilege does generally, around the states and in the federal system, have an exception where there are crimes or wrongs against a child in the marriage. So the tendency is somewhat uniform, although it's expressed in different ways under different areas. It seems to me that there is a good guide in what has been done in the lawyer-client area and the psychiatrist area. They draw a distinction between past crimes that are confessed and confessions of future crimes. Future crimes are disclosable. They also draw a distinction between when you're reasonably certain that
Let's be specific. That is, as Father Vasek was saying earlier, someone saying, I'm going to kill him or I'm going to hurt her.
That's right. And if it's they draw a distinction between whether it's reasonably specific and that you're reasonably certain that the person is going to do it. You have to be reasonably certain, and it has to be a threat to do something specific to a specific person, and it has to be bodily injury or death. And if it's a future crime as opposed to just getting counseling about a past crime, then in the lawyer-client area, the ethics code says you may, not you must, but you may disclose, which is a change just in the last couple of weeks at the ABA, American Bar Association, from what it had been previously. The lawyer was prohibited from disclosing. So basically, it's past versus future. You have to be reasonably certain. It has to be a very specific threat, a threat of bodily injury or death, and you have to be reasonably sure it's going to happen. And then it's only permission to disclose, not required for the professional to disclose. And I think that provides a good compromise and balance between the need for confidentiality and the need for preventing crime.
Eric, thank you for your call. Going to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Shay's joining us now. Hi, Shay.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
It would seem to me that people would be more reluctant to share some of their concerns and problems with their priest or religious leader in this case.
Father Vasek,
I'm not quite sure what you mean. What I think people, the whole point of the Sacrament of Reconciliation and the privilege is to give people a way of overcoming that reluctance so that they can come to grips with what's going on in their lives. Human beings are, myself included, are notoriously good at self-deception and putting off the problems that they need to face. And in this these particular matters, they're especially hard for an individual to admit that he or she is abusing somebody else. So the Sacrament of Confession is set up so that it's highly likely that a person will say, hey, this is an area where I've got a private zone where I won't be punished for whatever I say, so that I can explore as best as possible who I am and the evil that I've done, and therefore by come to grips with it. Its therapeutic value, as well as its sacramental and religious value, is precisely because it provides that safety zone where a person can confront himself or herself.
Let me pick up on what Shay's saying, though, because that confidentiality that Shay's referring to is at one level, and at a very real level, one person talking to another person. But it's also within the Catholic Church, the place where that person goes and confesses their sins to God through the Catholic priest. And so it's that conversation that where Shay's saying, so if the law is going to be looking over the shoulder of the priest outside the confessional, does that mean that the relationship of the people, and we could make this, broaden this out to any church, that the people won't be as inclined to speak about these things with their spiritual leaders?
I think that would follow in a fairly clear way, although there's some evidence that people would still want to get right with God and therefore would be willing to disclose. But I think the element of prohibition there would, or the wall would be a little higher for people to come and try and get a hold of themselves. Now, it should be said that when you're talking about things that people have confessed, it's also the obligation of a priest to insist that restitution, for example, if something's stolen, be returned. And so the penitent doesn't go out and just say, oh, I'm free, I've got no more responsibilities. But it's incumbent upon the penitent to try and change his or her own life. And and the priest can even say, mandate that particular thing. Now, whether the penitent falls through is a different matter.
And that may be more effective than the law trying to reform or remedy or punish people. And that's one of the big benefits I see from providing this confidentiality, encouraging people to come to the priest or the minister or the rabbi. And then a solution for society is fashioned. The guy is counseled to reform his ways. Frequently they do. Counseled to give back the property he's stolen, which happened in that case in New York. He gave back the property. And it provides, as the father says, therapeutic value. It
but we're also looking
health.
At it in context of the news that's in the papers and the abuse of children that was not reported, that could have been reported, and children who might have been protected.
But it didn't. That information didn't come from the confessional. That was priests telling other priests that I've done this, not in a confessional situation. I think it's actually very rare that the only evidence of ongoing child molestation is in the confessional. So I don't think you're losing a lot of evidence of crime if you maintain the confidentiality of the confessional, with the circumscribed exception that I mentioned.
Yeah, Father,
I think in the rectory, for example, if two priests are living in a rectory and one knows that the other person is doing something harmful to the children, that's automatically, of course, the first priest should report on the second priest. Now, the first thing he might do is trying to find out, is this true? He might, investigate.
Right.
I mean, similarly, if supposing one priest drinks too much one night, I mean, the second priest is not going to go on and say, hey, the whole world, this is a problem.
But we're led to believe that first priest has not been taking that information to the authorities. That's why the law is changing.
And that's why the law could and should change, and I think most priests would respect that, but also allowing for, as in all professions, a certain amount of tolerance for your fellow professionals, as well as also allowing for human failure that isn't going to repeat itself. But in these kinds of cases, as we're beginning to see, the problem is deeper than just human failure and human sin.
And I just want to add my voice that I think it is a crime not to disclose those kinds of things that must have been disclosed, and the vain hope that a person can be reformed when it's something like child sexual abuse is really just that, a vain hope.
All right, Shay, thanks for your call.
Okay.
All right, to Lexington, Massachusetts now. Tony's joining us. Hi, Tony.
Yeah. I guess I sort of want to reiterate what a lot of people have said, that it's really important to distinguish between a past crime and a situation in which someone is likely to repeat. Child abuse is really a pretty serious crime. It can affect someone for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And if there's any possibility that the person is going to do this again to the same victim or to another, that you really have to make an exception there.
So you're saying that in those cases, even the confidentiality of the confessional should...
Yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Do you feel that way, Tony, because you think that the Catholic Church had the opportunity to uphold the sanctity of the confessional and they dropped that? That you feel in some way that the Catholic Church has led you to that, or the actions of the Catholic Church have led you to that?
Yeah, I guess I'm very concerned. I think that there's been a lot of situations in which there's been protection of the people, the perpetrators, more than of the victims.
That's going to be hard, Father Vasek, for the Catholic Church to overcome, because that's pretty widely held view now.
And I think it's one that has puts every priest in a very difficult position, because on the one hand you have the confidentiality that's essential to the sacrament. On the other hand, you have concerns of justice. Now, normally speaking, in the sacrament, people come and talk about past failures. They don't come in and say, I'm going to do this. In fact, that's not even a subject matter for the confessional, because that's something you haven't yet done. But more normally people say, hey, this is what I have done, and I'm trying to reform my life, and therefore... And at that point, if it's a matter of such as child abuse, then the priest quite rightly would say, and you need to get help, and I insist on you getting help, and I won't absolve you unless you do give help. I mean, that's a possible move of a priest. I'm not saying every priest would do that. I'm not saying it's always wise to do that, but that would be a possible move. So
it would be hard, though, would it not, for a priest to say that to another priest? Harder. For one priest to say, I'm sorry, this what you've said to me in the privacy of confession is inadequate. There needs to be more restitution made.
It would be hard for a priest to say that to anybody, perhaps. But I think among priests, there's a certain responsibility for your fellow clergymen. And therefore, in that sense, it would be easier, because what's at stake is not only the individual priest, but is also the church's reputation and the reputation of the sacrament. And so a priest would want to secure that very important value.
All right. Tony, thanks for your call.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the reputation of the church. We're talking about the reputation of the sacrament and laws that are being brought in because people are having too many questions about the confidentiality there. We're interested in your thoughts. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection on NPR.
From Boston University.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. We're talking about the confidentiality of the confessional. We're talking about laws that are being enacted in states across the country that are breaking down some of the religious privileges that have existed in the country. My two guests are Paul Rothstein. He's professor of law at Georgetown University, specializing in evidence. And with me in the studio, Father Ed Vasek. He's a professor at the Weston Jesuit School of Theology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Maura now, calling us from Andover, Massachusetts. Hi, Maura. Maura, are you there? No. He's left, so we're going to Franklin, Massachusetts, and Carmen is joining us. Carmen?
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm being towed, so I can barely hear a thing.
You're being towed.
I'm being towed.
And you're in the car that's being towed?
Yes, and...
Do you need something to be absolved for?
But and the guy that's here would rather listen to country, but I have him listening to you. I have to say I agree with your last caller. I think the conversation is much more concentrated on the perpetrator. And though I understand that because we're talking about the church and the confessional, but I guess my question would be, well, first my comment is that we're talking about crimes. These are not, people aren't taking a can of beans out of Stop and Shop or mascara out of CVS. We're talking about children's lives that have been damaged forever, hundreds of children. children. And my question is, as sarcastic as it might be, what would your guest say to Jeffrey Dahmer going into the confessional years ago saying he likes children's body parts for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? And considering that I can't, you know, I'll take the answer off the air so I can listen.
All right, Carmen.
Thank you. Loudly. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. I'm going to ratchet it down a little bit from the Jeffrey Dahmer example because it's kind of extreme. But the point that Carmen makes is we're not talking just about, you know, theological judgment calls here. We're talking about things that the society has determined are really serious crimes.
A very difficult question. What we have, at least as I understand it with the child abuse cases, is we have an interesting mix of sin, of sickness, and of crime. And it's clearly a crime. It seems to be fairly clearly a sickness, and it also seems to be a sin. And all three of those are mixed up. That what the church has is it has as a practice, it's set up a practice to deal with the sin part of it and not a practice that deals with the crime part of it nor even with the sickness part of it. And so what the church says is we'll take our part, one segment of all of this, and we'll help the penitent, the person, to overcome their sinful side.
But surely the mistake that's been made to date is that in dealing with the sin, the church has been saying, and therefore we'll just keep the other undercover.
And that's precisely the problem, of course, and I agree with you. And there it has to do then with setting up certain practices in which you try and deal with something that's very important to people, namely sin, and then wondering where you can accommodate the other various serious matters, namely crime and ongoing crime and also sickness and ongoing sickness. There the priest would, I hope, insist that the person get help in terms of sickness and also get a lawyer or get to somebody and reveal the crime that has been taking place. So it's a little bit like a physician who takes care of one part of the human person and other parts insist that the person go see a psychiatrist, but he is going to concentrate on the person's toe or the person's heart or whatever. It's a specialty and it's a special practice because there's something very, very important about life, and that's our relationship with God.
Paul Rothstein, does the law of this country allow that kind of parsing?
In general, every person has an obligation enforceable under law to provide evidence that they may have that a court needs to resolve matters. Having said that, however, there is no obligation on people who are, for example, just bystanders and come across a crime. There is no obligation for them to report it. It seems to me that this priest-penitent situation is somewhere in between. It's your caller tried to make a distinction between very serious crimes and not so serious crimes, and that is something that the American Bar Association did endorse 2 weeks ago in its ethics code, that disclosure of crimes that involve bodily injury or death is permitted to the lawyer, but not less serious crimes. There was a big debate about whether property crimes or fraud like Enron should be disclosed by Enron's lawyers, voted down.
Sorry to interrupt, but let me take issue with your suggestion that if I witness a crime and don't say anything about it, that I may or may not be liable for that, because in effect what we're talking about, in part with lawyers, in part with doctors, and certainly with spiritual leaders, is the abuse of trust that those people have. They're not average citizens passing on the street exchanging confidences, but they're people who are invested by society with a significant amount of trust, right?
Well, that's right. The theory is that there would be no evidence of crime there if you didn't have the confidentiality, because people wouldn't come and confess to crime. So you wouldn't have that evidence of crime anyway. So the argument is, all right, let's tell them that it won't be disclosed. That'll encourage them to come and make the communication that they committed a crime, but you can't use it in court because it's privileged. You're in no worse position because of that privilege, because if there were no privilege, they wouldn't have created this evidence. They wouldn't have confessed to this at all. That's the argument. I think it's a little bit technical, but it's one you hear all the time.
All right.
And an element of that is that you were distinguishing between very serious and not so very serious. The confessional is set up precisely to deal with the very serious ones, and as an after and also ran is to deal with the more mundane sorts of problems that occur in life. But because the very serious crimes or sins that a person commits are those very things that jeopardize their relationship with God, The confessional is exactly designed to deal with the most serious, and it isn't designed to help people to confront the most serious things that they do. Without it, it's likely that people would just avoid these particular issues.
But I have to imagine that when you're talking with other theologians, other Catholic theologians, now the question, the debate is, has the Church messed up so badly now that we're going to have a difficult time persuading Catholics and others that we deserve that?
I think that's a possibility, but we haven't messed up in terms of the confessional. We've messed up in outside of the confessional, and I think Cardinal Law's admission of guilt or admission of failure, or however he describes it, is a clear admission that we didn't do this right. Across the United States, there's been other bishops who have recognized we haven't done this right. There's been a steep learning curve that's been going on, and I think what has happened is that the seal of confession, the privilege that has been given to that, has extended far too wide. And it's now being contracted to where it should be in the first place.
But see what happens when the Church goofs up and acquits itself badly in one area, not disclosing these priest-to-priest communications. Then the public reaction goes against the Church on many different fronts, even those that weren't involved. And even though the confessional really isn't involved in these sex abuse cases, there is going to be a public reaction against the confidentiality of the confessional, too.
Okay, to Star Lake, New York, Peter's joining us. Hello, Peter.
Yes, hello. I've been listening to your correspondence and to the comments made, and I agree with many of them, particularly the ones that the professor there and the father have commented on, but I foresee one thing that hasn't been brought up, and I'm greatly concerned at where we're going with a generic destruction of the confessional privilege. I think that could be the insertion of religious discord into our country, and I really feel we don't need that.
You mean the wall coming down between state and religion?
Completely, yes. And I feel that it will also lead to disharmony in America. You know, if you seize on just this clerical abuse, which is a very serious matter, and it should be dealt with strenuously, but if that's going to be the pretext to destroy generically the whole confessional privilege in every other matter, I think that that's grossly unfair, and I think that our country should watch where we're going with this.
Peter, one or two of the people listening to us now may be the parent of children who were abused by priests.
I realize that, and my heart goes out.
And they're thinking that, you know, there's got to be an exception. There's got to be a protection. And if it means an infringement on the principle that means so much to you, maybe that should be there.
I see that. And my heart goes out to them again. But, you know, there's a dichotomy here, and we have to balance one against the other. And this is a serious problem, and it has to be rectified in the Church. And I cry for the Church over it and for those ones who have abused their authority and misused their position. But by the same token, something that goes back for 1,000 years or more, you just don't discard it with just like tossing out bathwater. And I really feel it can have serious consequences for our country at large, too, because where does it stop? I mean, first, and I'm just talking about the generic.
Let's let the father in here,
and
Peter.
There's another element of the same slippery slope, if you will, and that is that if this particular matter, namely child abuse, were an exception in the confessional, then what would be the next outcry? What would that be? Would there be another exception if you have an abortion? Or would there be another exception if you commit a murder? Or would there and pretty soon, many of the major social crimes would be excluded from the confessional, at least the privilege of the confessional. And priests are very worried about that kind of slippery slope also.
That's my concern. That's my main concern. Where would it end? What would be the next rung of the ladder? Perhaps even to go out of the theological realm, I can foresee, you know, just abandoning all lawyer-client relationships, too, because of some horrid travesty that happened.
All right. Peter,
and
thanks.
I think we have to be careful where we're going here.
Thank you for your call. I want to take the part of that sort of the natural conclusion would be to go to our law professor, Paul Rothstein, and say, is this destined to end up at the Supreme Court for precisely the sort of answer that Peter's raising?
Yes, I think so, almost definitely. That's right. What exceptions should there be to the privilege?
And does that mean that the Supreme Court justices of the day will be saying that this crime, yes, this crime, no, this exception, yes, this exception, no? Is that how you see it playing out?
They may do it more generically than that. For example, they may say a threat of committing future serious bodily injury or death, if it's specific and known to the priest, rather than just a hunch, that must be revealed, something like that, more generic.
Father Vasek, you teach young priests. What are you telling them now?
I'm telling them the sort of thing we're talking about here, namely that they have a responsibility in justice to the victims of crime. They have a responsibility for society to take care of the victims of crime. But they also are priests and functioning within a practice that's very useful to society, exceptionally important in the church, exceptionally important to the individual. And that latter, the confessional, needs the security, the safety of an absolute confidentiality. So were the Supreme Court to say the following are exceptions and must be disclosed, I would say to the priest, you go to jail for that. You don't disclose. And
that's what you're counseling the priest to do. You're saying you do not what the law says. You go to jail before you do what the law says.
Exactly.
And is that open to question in terms of what kind of responsible advice you're giving them? Because people could look at that as saying, oh, great, we changed the law, and you guys still won't tell when a crime has been committed or a crime is about to be committed.
It's always possible to rethink, okay? And the nature of the discipline of theology, which I am engaged in, surely requires us to rethink. Would we rethink this? I'm sure we would rethink it. Would we come out with a different conclusion? I'm not so sure. But rethinking and taking into account new evidence, taking into account shifts in society, the church has been doing that all along and will continue to do it. And that's what I think the Gagin case is about. It's the church in Boston, the church in the United States is rethinking its own policies. I can imagine it rethinking its policy of confession, because confession itself has a long history. In the early church, confessions were much more public. In present-day life, that's not so, and the people have a right to expect this kind of privileged confidentiality.
And is the church likely to make any kind of adaptation? So if a priest chooses not to go to jail, but chooses to tell, that there can be some future for that person in the church?
Presently, the person is automatically excommunicated. What would happen, and the censure is reserved to Rome, so the person would have to go to Rome and be absolved in Rome. And could that change? Again, the church changes a lot in these sorts of matters, but I don't expect that it would change on this particular issue.
Well, thanks to both of you for joining me on this program.
Thank you, Dick.
And thank you.
Father Ed Vasek, professor at the Weston Jesuit School of Theology at Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul Rothstein, professor of law at Georgetown University. Earlier in the program, we talked with Massachusetts State Senator Cheryl Jakes. She's a sponsor of the mandated reporter bill. The Connection is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Rousseau, and Doug Sugarts. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
This is WBUR. We're funded by UR listeners and by New England.